This is Digital Story Podcast number 597, August 15th, 2017. Today's theme is I've Got Shotgun. I'm Derek Story. In my mind, road trips are a two-person activity. One needs to focus on driving, while the other serves as navigator. And with the current mapping technology, sudden route changes to avoid traffic jams are a great benefit if you have someone to monitor the situation. These days, that person would be me. And the side benefit of acting as navigator is that you also get to enjoy the tremendous photography opportunities. And we're going to explore those in today's show. Okay, so first of all, so I'm not misinterpreted on this. For those of you unfamiliar with the term riding shotgun, this is a term that was coined in the stagecoach days here in the U.S. And that's when the person seated next to the driver was assigned the task of protecting the entire crew, mainly from bandits or anyone that wanted to rob or do harm to the stagecoach. So you have the driver focusing on driving, just like it should be today. And then you had the person riding shotgun sitting next to the driver with, yes, a shotgun, ready to protect the entire crew from anything that might happen to them. And that's where that term came from. Now, of course, that term has persisted all the way to today. I know when I was a teenager, we used to call out shotgun. I've got shotgun. And then that means that you got to ride up front. You didn't get stuck in the back seat. You know, and especially when you're as tall as me, boy, that's a big coup if you can get shotgun. Today, we don't have to worry so much about bandits pulling us over as we make our road trips up and down the state or wherever we happen to be going. But riding shotgun has kind of taken on yet again another dimension, because now we have these great mapping systems available to us, both in the car, but I think even better on our smart devices, whether you have an Android or iOS device, and having not only turn-by-turn directions, but directions that change on the fly depending on what the traffic conditions are. So now our mapping technology, you know, sets a route for us and gives us turn-by-turn directions, lets us know how long it's going to take us to get there, let us know our estimated arrival time, you know, all that good kind of stuff. But then if something happens on the established route, then it lets us know that, and then it will offer an alternate route so that we can avoid, let's say, a minor fender bender or something that's backing up traffic. For people like me who spend a lot of time traveling in California, which is very much a freeway and car state, then this mapping technology is wonderful, and it has saved me more than three or four times. It has saved me probably at least a half a dozen times from being stuck in a traffic jam and wasting a lot of time and helping me avoid trouble. Now, here's the thing about this great technology, though. In my opinion, I don't think it's a one-person technology, because by the same token, driving these days, I think, is very challenging. We have a lot of distracted drivers on the road, drivers who are texting or who are on their phone or who are, you know, eating three-course meals, whatever they happen to be doing. It's amazing the things that we see going on in the cars that cut in front of us or try to run us off the road, right? So I think that the driver really needs to focus on driving whenever possible, and that a second person, in this case, a navigator, runs the mapping technology, puts a second set of eyes on the road, and is just, you know, helpful as needed to help the driver to navigate all the stuff that's going around him or her. And so I really think that, especially for road trip driving, but, you know, whenever possible, whenever, especially when you're on a freeway, that having two people, I just think, works better. Now, the reason why I'm talking about mapping technology and road trips and all that kind of stuff is because that the shotgun idea, you know, in other words, now the person riding shotgun is the navigator, Now the navigator has an opportunity to do other stuff also, because yes, you have to monitor the navigation system. Yes, you're a second set of eyes and all that, but you do have more free time than the person driving the car. The person driving the car has virtually no free time. And so since I am the navigator in, you know, my current situation, mainly because my travel partner, my wife, she prefers to drive. She just feels like that she's more comfortable being in control of the car. She likes driving. She gets nervous when she's a passenger and someone else is driving. And it just works out better for everyone if she's behind the wheel. I'm fine with that because for the first part of my life, I always had to drive, which means then I was going to buy these wonderful things, scenery and monuments and interesting, odd things that happen off the side of the road. And I wasn't able to do anything about it, not even fully appreciate it as an observer. Now that I'm the navigator, not only do I get to watch the world go by in a way that I never did before, but I get to photograph it at the same time. And I think that this is a very interesting photo opportunity. Now, people say to me all the time, what do you mean you're taking pictures from the car while it's moving? I mean, do you get anything good? Like, well, actually, I do. And it's so funny. Why wouldn't you get anything good? I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, this is a situation that we don't have, you know, when we're out walking around, which is the way that I shoot most of the time. But now you're in this moving vehicle. You're going, you know, sometimes through some very interesting scenery, and you have all this stuff going on. That sounds like a great photo opportunity. And I sort of wonder why people look at me so puzzled when I say that I like to shoot while the car is moving. At any rate, I do. And I do think that there are pictures to be had. So here we go. I've got some tips for you. If you can finagle yourself into the shotgun seat, if you can make yourself a navigator instead of driver, this is great for those of us who are photographers. Now, first of all, before I get into my list of things about, you know, what you should keep in mind as, you know, photographer riding in the right seat, unless you're in England, then you'd be in the left seat. But anyway, unless you're a photographer riding in the other seat. One thing, though, that is part of this job is that you have to be a good navigator, all right? Otherwise, you're going to lose your seat. So, you know, you have to get good with the mapping technology. You have to pay attention. If you're a person that doesn't have a great sense of direction, you might want to do a little planning before you ever get in the car. But in order for you to cement your role as navigator and to hold down that shotgun position, first of all, you have to be a good navigator, okay? So that has nothing to do with photography. That just has to do with, you know, hanging on to your job, okay? All right. So now, once you've secured your position as navigator, here are some things to keep in mind when it's time to take pictures. First of all, before you leave, you know, you have to prepare your camera kit for front seat travel. Now, since many of us that listen to this podcast are already nimble photographers, that isn't too big of an issue because we're probably already traveling fairly light. For those who aren't nimble photographers, though, you don't want to bring your giant low-pro backpack up front and have that with you while you're riding in the car. It's just not going to go over with anyone, and you're probably not going to be that comfortable either. It's going to really cut into your legroom. So I use my standard bag that I've been using a lot lately, that I talked about last week and so forth. The Retrospective 7 has a flap that opens up. I can open up the flap. My equipment's exposed, and I can grab it quickly as I need it. It doesn't take up much room, has a small footprint, and off you go. You know, that's like step one, is just don't bring this giant bag up front. Don't bring your trunk of gear into the front seat, all right? Now, the other thing, though, that might not be quite as obvious unless you've done this a fair amount, you want to remove any protection filters from the lenses that you might use. because there will be times where you're already shooting through glass and you don't want to shoot through another set of glass. And quite honestly, your lenses aren't going to be challenged a whole lot environmentally with this type of shooting. You don't need your protection filters. So go ahead and take them off. And especially if you find yourself having to shoot through the windshield, which, you know, we'll talk a bit more about that, then you don't want to be shooting through glass and glass, okay? So take those off. And then also make sure that your flash is off if you have a camera with a built-in flash, because you don't want to be popping off the flash on that first shot or two. Sometimes that first shot or two might be the best shot of the whole trip, and you don't want to lose it because the flash is bouncing off the glass. So, you know, make sure that your flash is off. So anyway, prepare. Just like any other assignment, prepare your kit, prepare your bag, prepare your gear so that you're ready to go when you have the opportunity to set down the iPhone or the smartphone for a moment as navigator and click off a few shots. All right, next, and this is another thing that's not only before you leave but also during the trip, keep those windows clean, because there are times that you're going to have to shoot through them. And depending on what time of year and where you're driving, bugs become more of an issue than at other times. And bugs make terrible filters. if you got a big old spot on the windshield and, you know, you have to navigate around it, they're not good, right? So you want to keep the windows as clean as you can. And then also when you stop to fuel, you probably want to clean the windows, at least on your side, right? No, you better do the driver's side too, because remember, going back to the very first thing that I said, you've got to stay in good graces with the driver in order to hang on to this, you know, this sweet gig you got there in shotgun. Now, if you are going to have to shoot through the windshield, which you will at times, be aware of reflections, right? And reflections can be tough, especially during the very bright parts of the day. Get the camera lens up as close to the glass as possible. Sometimes, a lot of times I've learned as I'm shooting through glass to just be aware of the reflections. And then I've noticed that if I just move the camera a little to the left or right or up or down or something, that I can get rid of most of them, or at least position them out of the frame. It's something that has to be in your consciousness, though. And that's what's interesting. You know, when we're doing this shoot, it's like learning how to do any other kind of shoot. There's stuff to learn. There's stuff to be aware of that's particular to this type of photography. So be aware of those reflections. Try to minimize them best you can. And then sometimes, of course, you get to roll down the side window. And then you don't have to worry about glass at all. But, you know, that's going to depend on the weather. That's going to depend on the other passengers. It's more noisy when you roll it down. So I tend to save rolling down the window for those very special times when, you know, they're like, okay, I'm going to hang on to like two or three of these requests. And then when something really good comes along, I'm going to use one of those requests and go to the well then. But I'm not going to be doing it all the time, or I'm going to, again, probably lose my position as navigator. Windows clean, and learn how to shoot through glass. A little bit of practice goes a long ways on this sort of thing. All right, and oh, one last thing about that is that the polarizer can be a handy filter depending on the angle of the sun and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely something that you want to have in your bag of tricks. Keep in mind that the polarizer might be able to help you under certain lighting conditions when glare or reflections are a problem. Number three, experiment with techniques that you don't normally have time for. I've talked about this before on family vacations, but boy, I tell you, riding shotgun is a great time to practice with your camera, and especially if you have a newer camera and you're trying to learn some of the things that it can do. This is a wonderful opportunity, because a lot of times if you're on a road trip, you'll have a lot of time to play with your camera, and you'll have a lot of time to learn how these different functions work. So things like testing the art filters, trying the different monochrome settings, trying film emulations, you know, all that kind of stuff. This is the perfect time to do it, because not only might you get some very interesting shots trying things that your camera can do that you don't normally take advantage of, but then you'll also get better with those things. This is opportunity to have them become more natural techniques so that even when you're not in the car, you may find yourself using these great tools more because you're already comfortable with them because you've already practiced 8 or 10 hours or whatever, that last road trip was. So road trips and riding shotgun, a wonderful time to experiment with new techniques, new settings. Take advantage of it. Don't just shoot the normal way that you always shoot on these sort of trips. You're missing an opportunity if you do. This is a time to experiment and to be creative and to try new stuff. And I think trying new stuff is a very important part of road trip photography. Be ready for twilight and sunrise. These are great times on the road. There can be very dramatic shots. You got to remember to maybe raise the ISO a bit. You might want to play with color a bit. You might want to change lenses to have a wider aperture lens, all that sort of stuff. But when it's getting close to either sunrise or sunset, and these conditions are very different, and this is far and away. I love shooting on the edges of the day just in my normal photography, but in car photography, road trip photography, I like it even more because it's so cool. It's so cool. Be aware of it. Be aware that it's coming. Change your gear up accordingly and be ready for those opportunities. Because as we know, sun going up and sun going down, there's a small window when things are perfect, and then that window changes quickly. All right? So you don't want to be fooling around with your gear while, optimum conditions are right there in front of you. And number 5, use motion to your advantage. And there's something that I call the near and far rule when you're shooting out the side window of a car, of a moving car. And so the way that the near and far rule works is that close to you, let's say that you're going 65 miles an hour, close to you, you're going to see a lot of motion in the frame. So let's say that you're in the right-hand lane, you're going 65 miles an hour, then the brush and stuff that's, right off the edge of the highway is going to show a lot of motion. However, the mountain range that's off in the distance will show no motion at all. So near shows motion, far does not. And then, it's on a varying degree as you go from near to far. Well, if you have this in mind, then you can bring this into your compositions. And so then you're positioning the elements in the frame to take advantage of near and far, where maybe you want a little bit of motion at the bottom, that's kind of neat, but then you really want the scene that looks like you were on a tripod in the background, and you want to play with the juxtaposition that way. Or you may want to go the other way, where you're showing a lot of motion and you have nothing that's stationary, or maybe a small element that's stationary. And once you get this into your programming for composition, the near and far rule, I think, is very cool. And I think it brings a lot of energy to the shots when you have motion displayed in certain ways. Have a lot of fun with near and far. Really get a feel for how it works and use it to your advantage when you're composing. Now, my last tip is not really a tip here. This is sort of the wrap up, because I've already given you 5 tips, so we know we can't do any more than that. But try not to judge too much while you're shooting. Yes, you can go ahead and look at your shots if you want in between. In some ways, that's a lot of fun. But don't get into judging too much. Really just sort of try to fall into it, and whatever technique you're using, whatever special effect or art filter that you're playing with, just let it roar. Just let it happen and really immerse in that. You can sort out the shots later on, back in the hotel room or once you're home or whatever. But while you're shooting, try to stay away from judging and really just stay in a creative mind and try to use these techniques and experiment with the elements that you have around you as they're happening. The magic of shotgun photography is to let go photographically so you can capture that wildly unique shot that you never anticipated, but that you dearly love. Start jockeying for that seat right now. The minute you all walk out of the door of the house, yell shotgun, right? Because that's binding. Yell shotgun, be ready to navigate, prove that you're worthy of sitting there, you know, hang on to that seat and get some great shots. It's a lot of fun. Seriously, it's a lot of fun. Play with it a little bit, see what happens for you. How to test your solar eclipse glasses. So as we get closer to the eclipse that's coming up on August 21st, all sorts of stuff is happening. And one of the things that's happening is that there have been some unscrupulous types, I'm sure you've seen the headlines, who have been selling glasses for viewing the solar eclipse that are not up to snuff. They're not up to spec. There is a standard for these types of glasses, and the respected manufacturers such as Celestron follow those specs or exceed them. But there are some people that are just seeing this as an opportunity to make money, and they're not following spec. And, you know, they could harm a lot of people's eyesight, which I just think, this is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. There's been some good articles online about this, and I'm just going to read you this blurb off Time Magazine, an article that they put up about fake solar eclipse glasses and some advice around that, just so that you can make sure that when the eclipse is happening, the day of the eclipse on the 21st, that you're not worrying about your glasses, you're not worrying about your gear, you're not worrying about the filter for your camera, all that kind of stuff, all right? So I'm just going to read you this thing right here. It's not enough today to just look for the ISO certification, as many vendors have started printing glasses with ISO certifications, even if the glasses do not meet industry standards. Experts warn, so your best bet is to only buy from trusted vendors. How creepy is that? I mean, really. I mean, some of this stuff... all right. Anyway, it's creepy, okay? If eclipse glasses were purchased from an unauthorized dealer online, experts suggest conducting an at-home test. When you look through the lenses, the AAS said, you should not be able to see anything except for the sun or anything else significantly bright, like a halogen light bulb or a bright white LED flashlight. All such sources of light should look dim through the real eclipse glasses. The glasses should also not have any tears or scratches on them. You need to wear your glasses during the partial solar eclipse when the sun is partially blocked by the moon, but can take them off for the brief totality phase, that is if you're somewhere that's having totality, in which the sun's light is entirely blocked for up to 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And our solar eclipse, as I said earlier, is coming to North America on Monday, August 21st, 2017. I think even if you bought your glasses from a respectable authorized dealer, I would test them anyway before August 21st. I tested mine when I read this article today, and yes, they're extremely dense. And I could not see anything other than a very bright light source that was shining directly into the glasses. And that's the way yours should be too. Get them tested, make sure that everything is set up. And then the other thing I wanted to mention about the solar filters, the way most of the solar filters are designed, and there's been some kerfuffle around the solar filters too, and these are for your cameras. Generally speaking, most of the solar filters that I'm seeing are for viewing and composing on your LCD screen. So in other words, you put the solar filter over the lens of your camera, and then you compose your image on the LCD screen, not the optical viewfinder. The solar filters used for viewing on the LCD screen tend to be much, much, much safer for your gear and for your eyes. Most of them are not designed for, you know, looking through the optical viewfinder. In fact, a lot of articles I read that if you're going to be looking through an optical viewfinder, then you should have solar glasses on, even if you have a solar filter over the front of the lens. So I think the safest way to go, and for most of us that shoot with cameras that have live view on the LCD screen, just do your composing on the LCD screen if you have a solar filter, and then that way you know you're safe, not only your gear, but your eyes both. Alrighty? Only about a week away. It's pretty exciting stuff. I can't wait to take some pictures, and I can't wait even more just to watch it and enjoy it. using Cascaball as a remote control for your camera. So I want to talk about a basic use of this app today, and Cascaball is a sponsor for this week's podcast, and they're also a really cool remote control software for Canon, Nikon, Panasonic, Fuji, Olympus cameras. And even though these cameras have remote control apps most of the time, Cascaball is a little different. And one of the things I'm going to point out today, especially me as an Olympus shooter, is this feature with the live histogram, which I don't have on my Olympus OI Share app. So anyway, if you haven't done this sort of Wi-Fi shooting before, it's a lot of fun. You start out by firing up your camera and enabling Wi-Fi on it. And if you don't know how to do that, of course, you'll have to check the owner's manual. Once it's broadcasting Wi-Fi, then you have to go to settings and pick up that Wi-Fi connection just like you would any other Wi-Fi. In my case, I see Olympus Pin there in the list of available Wi-Fi connections. I choose that. Now my phone and the camera are talking. And then all I have to do is launch Cascaball. And as soon as I do that, it sees that Wi-Fi connection and grabs it right away. So now it can talk to my camera. Now we're all set up. The connection is made. Then in Cascaball, what I do is I turn on histogram and grid. And there's a green histogram icon in the bottom toolbar. So I think it's over on the left side. So, and what this does is that when you're in live view mode, in other words, when you're seeing on your phone what the camera is seeing, the live view mode, then you get a histogram for that scene that's right above the picture. So you have the picture that your camera's seeing, and then you have a histogram above it. Now, if you have the pro version of Cascaball, you also have available to you zebra stripes. And zebra stripes are very handy for, you know, seeing what areas are out of range. In other words, what highlights are blowing out. So if you have a really bright window with a lot of light coming through it that's way out of range, out of dynamic range for the rest of the scene, then Cascaball will show zebra stripes there on that window so that you know that that's going to be pure white if you take a shot. They're very handy. They're great for video also. So zebra stripes come with the pro version, but the histogram is available with the free version. So now you have it all set up. You're looking at the live scene on your camera. You have the histogram above the picture. I would go ahead and go to camera settings, and that's another one of those green icons that has the back of the camera. And I would, just for this exercise, to you really get comfortable, go ahead and set the exposure mode to P, program mode, set white balance to auto, and set the drive mode to single. That way the camera is going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting, alrighty? And then, okay, so now you're viewing the scene on the iPhone and you're looking at it and you're looking at the live histogram. If it's a scene that should be exposed more or less normally, and let's say that the histogram's bunching up on the left side, it means it's going to be underexposed. Now all you have to do in Cascaball is just go to exposure compensation. It's got a big old icon there, and a little slider will come up. And just move that slider to the right, in other words, add exposure, and you can watch the histogram change and you can watch the image change on your iPhone. And so then as you're watching it change, and when the histogram looks the way that it should and the scene looks the way that it should, then you have made the proper exposure compensation. Now all you got to do is tap the button and take the picture, and you will have a good exposure. And this is really super handy because a lot of times when we're using the remote control for our cameras, we are working in tricky lighting or edges of the day and all that kind of stuff. And to be able to really, you know, look at the shot, not only, you know, the elements of the shot itself, the composition, but also the live histogram, and then make these exposure adjustments, that saves us a lot of time. That saves us a lot of time so that we can work as efficiently as possible. Now, if you have the pro version and you have zebra stripes, then you can also note that. That's another part of the equation that helps you know any really bright areas. And by the way, a note on zebra stripes, just because you have a spectral highlight, a highlight that's going to be pure white, That doesn't mean that you have to adjust exposure to necessarily get rid of it. Some things should be pure white, such as a reflection, or maybe you want that little window to have a pure white light shining through it. So the zebra stripes are more to help you know more what's pure white, but they're not necessarily there for you to have to feel like you have to eliminate it, okay? Anyway, so then you make that make those adjustments and take your pictures. Caskwell is available to get started for free in the iOS App Store. Its pro features come with a free trial when subscribing for $2 a month. There's all sorts of pro features, but there's all sorts of free features too. And it can be unlocked for a one-time purchase of $29.99. We have a tile on all the pages of the digital story that will take you directly to our landing page on the Caskwell site. Go there, take a look at it, get that free version. Caskwell is a terrific app. It works for all sorts of cameras. They have the list of all the cameras on their site. I'm using it with Olympus, but you can also use a Panasonic, Fujifilm, Sony, Nikon, Canon. Take a look at it. Have some fun with it. This is a very handy tool to have in your bag of tricks. All right, just a few things to note before we move on and get to, the solar eclipse coming next week. I want to mention to you that we have a new Photos 3 added to our Nimble Classroom series, and that's coming up in November. We've already got some signups for it. We sold out Photos 3 on the October 7th class, and then, of course, we have Catalog Management for Capture One Pro. That's coming up later this week, August 19th. And then we have September 9th, we have Expert Editing Capture One Pro. And on the 23rd of September, we're going to have Luminar Pro Techniques. The Nimble Classroom series is designed to provide you with that small class feeling, the ability to, you know, ask questions, to have your questions answered in a very comfortable environment, but you don't have to travel. You know, you can enjoy it from the comfort of your own home. If you want to learn more about it, just go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on Classroom up in the nav bar, and you can see all the classes that we have going. And as I mentioned last week, we have one spot open for our Ottoman Wine Country Photography Workshop this coming October 26th, 27th, and 28th. It's going to be a blast, and I have a link to it in the show notes. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper for not only supporting this podcast, but for providing me with the tools that I need to make prints, greeting cards, all this wonderful stuff. And my mom said to me, she commented about a card I had given her back a few weeks ago, and said, you know, so you just make those? And I said, yeah, I can make them from my iPhone, just send them directly to the printer. And she goes, they look so good. I thought that was nice when your mom says that. Anyway, so thanks to Red River Paper for, you know, supporting this podcast and for making my mom happy. Red River Paper has a tile on all the pages of the digital story and have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I tell you, jockey for that shotgun position and try some of the stuff I talked about today. It is fun photography, and I think you'll have a blast. I'm going to get to work on stuff for next week. Come back and join me then. Until then, have a great week. Take some shots. Bye-bye now.